Hello and welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast, brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. And like every single episode of this Tour de France, joining me is Dave McKenzie. How are you, Dave?
I'm feeling like I'm just on the top of the last horizon. I think I could just about put the car into neutral and descend it down into Nice for the finale. But we're not there yet.
I thought you were going to say I'm on the top of a mountain, and yes, you are.
Yes, literally we are, and we're overlooking even higher peaks. Just listen for a second. Can you hear those birds, people? That is not, we're not dropping that in. That's real birds.
And actually, that's right. Also, you can hear the silence, no cars.
No cars.
Nothing, yep. no fans, no cycling fan, no, nothing.
So what do you think, do we create this ourselves? Or tonight when we descended that mountain, every single car in front of us, like every single car turned left and we turned right.
Yeah. How worried were you? I was a little worried.
I was less worried than you. Oh no, I was concerned because I said to our other colleagues in the car, can two of you just punch in the hotel as well? I had it on my phone.
Just to triple check.
Yeah.
And then, so we had one GPS going, another one GPS, and you wanted a third GPS going.
Yeah, just to make sure. There was a traffic jam coming against us.
Which we estimate at about 11 kilometers. Yeah, that's the estimation.
Yeah.
11 kilometers of traffic jam.
It was.
And you know what? This is what the Tour de France creates. It creates entertainment. It also creates a little bit of chaos in the towns around. But people accept it.
Well,
this is the thing.
For us, sometimes, some days you're the nail, sometimes you're the hammer.
Exactly.
So what were we? Are you the hammer? We're the hammer. Today we're the hammer. So
today we are happy. We're on the top of a mountain. And just for you to picture, yes, we are in a ski resort, which is, of course, in the summer. But it's also holiday season in France. So fantastic. Fantastic as well is the racing that we saw happening today. There is no doubt that Tadej Pogacar threw a massive blow today at Jonas Vingegaard and at Visma. He was leaving no chance. He didn't want Visma to win that stage. End of story.
Well, he didn't want anyone to win it except him or someone from his team.
Let's debate this. Because Pogacar won an attack because Jorgensen was at the front. But would you think that if he was any other team, let's say he was Jai, he would have done exactly the
100%.
Same?
100%. Yeah, I think so, yeah. He's here to win. He's not here to give any gifts. And he hasn't given any gifts in his career as yet, has he? So, no, I think it was just coincidence that it happened to be Visma, you know, that went for it.
There's a quote from Tadej that said, basically mid-stage, they understood that Visma was here to win the stage. And he said, I was not going to let them.
Yeah.
That's at least it's Frank.
Yeah, that's right. And he delivered the knockout punch. He delivered the knockout punch with about 8 kilometres to go. We waited for a reaction from Jonas. We were waiting for Jonas maybe to attack, it didn't come. And the reaction didn't even come.
And one thing that was picked up in the French coverage I was listening by Marion Rousse, actually, she said from the very early start of the climb, she said, ooh, Jonas is not in the wheel of Tadej Pogacar, because he has been for every single centimeter of this Tour de France in the wheel of Tadej Pogacar. And entering that climb, she saw it straight away. He's following Remco. And he did. And could we say that today Jonas Vingegaard understood / capitulated on the win?
Conceded,
yeah, it would be better word,
yeah. I mean, capitulation, no. Because the crazy side of it is, the next two quickest times on that mountain were probably Remco
and him
and Jonas. Yeah. So it's just that we're comparing anyone in the race, including Jonas, to Pogacar at the moment. As we did last year, we said Pogacar capitulated in the TT almost.
Mm-hmm.
He finished second. You know, it's crazy. So it's a real reverse of what we saw last year.
Is there a little bit somewhere, or maybe I don't have the right word for it, but a little bit of revenge into it in a way
from last year?
Well, yeah, Pogacar thought last year Visma did not leave any chance to...
Yeah, didn't give him a...
They didn't give him an inch. This year, Pogacar is doing exactly the same.
Yeah.
He's when he can take an inch, he will take an inch on Visma.
Yeah, he will. And I guess to sort of go on and stay on that discussion. The Giro is a good example. He won six stages, so it didn't matter who was. If he decided he wanted to win, anyone in front of him, I think,
was a prey.
Yeah, and also, I think there's an element. It's respect to his teammates who work all day for him. And I remember there was one day in the Giro where we thought it would be an opportunist day. And in the end, at the end, he said, well, you know, it was actually the team, the riders, who made the decision, not me. They said, no, we want to ride for you today. We want you to win. So not just ride to defend, it was ride to actually win the stage and control it. And that's what they've done here. You know, they could have easily let a breakaway win the day today and not, it wouldn't have been a real threat to him at all. And that breakaway, the breakaway that was away, they could have easily let them win by 5 minutes, no issues at all, but they just didn't want to.
Yeah.
So it's brutal when you're one of those riders thinking, maybe, you know, 5 years ago, this breakaway would have won the day and I would have been in with a chance for a win. Jorgensen, you know, would have thought exactly that. But, you know, we used to criticise, or fans used to criticise, and journalists and reporters, 10 years ago, you know, riders gifting stages, and in the GC, true, the yellow giving a stage win, why don't you race in? Well, guess what, peeps? No more arguments, because now that's exactly what we're not seeing. So we want to see a closer race, but actually I commend Pogge for just going for it and racing. Yeah. And Vingegaard and all of them, you know.
Vingegaard at the end as well completely crumbled in tears.
Did he?
You should check your messages. Really? I sent you a message.
mate, I'm working.
He crumbled in tears in the arms of his wife.
Wow.
And you could see real emotion. You can see the helmet lifting up. He's sobbing.
Yeah,
he's totally sobbing. So it's the way that probably either he understood, he's conceded,
yeah,
but also what comes up to the surface is all the work and the trauma and the problems that he has to go through this year. To still finish second at the Tour de France so far, but still second at the Tour de France with everything that has happened so far this year.
It's phenomenal.
Full emotion.
Yeah, and I think there's probably some good emotions in him. There's no bad emotions. I think it's always good to be able to, you know, release that pressure valve and let it all out. Obviously, some disappointment, but I think, and he said it already a couple of times throughout this tour, from where he's come from and come back from, you know, ground zero, effectively, from that crash. He was down for a while. He couldn't get on a plane for a while. He had to stay in Spain, didn't he, for a couple of weeks, I think. So, no, this is, you know, that's right. There's a couple of sides to look at of Vingegaard and the battle between him and Pogacar. And, you know, they'll embrace. It's not over yet.
No,
it's not. Either way, they'll embrace Sunday. It is. You know,
I mean, let's be fair. Okay, let's be honest.
It's a 5-minute margin.
Okay.
It needs to be an absolute
this
disaster.
This podcast is about truth, so let's be fair.
Yes.
It's probably going to be hard for Vingegaard to win it from here. Okay.
Yeah.
/ almost impossible.
Yeah.
Unless something dramatic happened.
Yeah.
And if something dramatic happened, then he would not be necessarily on the saddle. There would be something much more important than you can't imagine the way Pogacar and the form Pogacar has displayed for him to crumble 5 minutes in the last 2 days.
No, and we talked about it a week ago, saying, well, you know, Pog lost 4 minutes on one climb last year. But the difference is, so that's possible, but the difference is Pog's trajectory is nothing but up at the moment, and Vingegaard's trajectory is slightly going down. He, you know, and you could see today was the first day, actually, he'd suffered a bit more. Remco was, you know, turning the screws on him a little bit more, whereas he was sort of probably turning them on Remco. So, yeah, he's tired, but he should hold his head high, Vingegaard.
So two numbers here. Pogacar, okay, is his 10th Grand Tour win this year.
Stage win.
That's a Grand Tour stage win. Six in Italy.
Yep.
Four here.
Yep.
There's two more stages to come. Can he do 6 and 6?
He totally can.
Imagine
he can
this.
Win the TT.
Imagine this.
Yeah,
imagine him winning the Giro and the Tour de France with 6 and 6 stages. Should he do the Vuelta?
No. Let someone else win it. Just let someone else have some fun.
Yeah, it's a fair question.
It is.
You always want more.
I don't think he could. I mean, he said there's 99% chance I won't do it. He did. He said it in an interview because someone asked the question.
But imagine that.
Oh, it would be... The media would be salivating.
Yeah.
But dare I say, SBS management might actually put us on the plane to Spain.
I'm all for that.
You know, to say, okay, this may be something. Because well, we're putting our hand up.
This is once in a lifetime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's no one's ever done it, have they? No,
I don't think so.
No, yeah, no one's ever done it. The three Grand Tours in 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. He's not going there. He's not going
to... Actually, Sepkus rode the three Grand Tours in 1 year last year.
Yeah, he rode all three in one.
And won one.
Yeah. But Pogs potentially looking at winning all three. But no, he won't be there.
No, he won't be there.
He won't be there. And
the 1% there is a chance.
There's a chance.
If you remember Dumb and Number, there is a chance.
So you're saying, you're telling me there is a chance. Ever optimism.
Yeah. Right? Remco, what does he do if he wants to step up and claim the second seat on the podium?
Yeah.
Is it even feasible? Realistically?
It is. There's a chance. Is it
where the battle is right now?
Yeah, that's right. This is where we sort of move our attention to a little bit in terms of the GC. So now we look at that and go, Remco ideally pulls some time tomorrow, and then the 30 plus kilometres individual TT, which, contrary to what I was thinking, because I didn't look that far ahead.
Yeah.
It's a tough TT, the final stage, mm-hmm. remember. So for you people, good people listening, reminding you also that it's not a road stage. It's not a champagne sort of procession. It's a proper time trial, and it's a proper climb. They go up Col d'Huez. They start in Monaco. We'll talk about that, obviously, more tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. So Remco needs to rip some time tomorrow, I think, and put himself within a minute and a half. Or he's 2 minutes behind, I think, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
he needs to be a minute and a half at least, I think, you know, ideally more, like closer, I should say, a minute. But his form seems to be a little bit better than Vingegaard's now. And I suppose I think he will time trial better, but you just don't know. At this end of the Grand Tour, it's been a hard one. They're all hard, aren't they? But a TT on the final day, first time since 89. It's really hard to tell who's going to produce a good TT.
Yeah, 100%. At some point on the stage, we had number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 of the GC in that order on the climb. You said it yesterday. It was going to be a battle for potentially a breakaway, but if it's not, it would be a total GC. And he was in order. This is what has happened.
Just shows where shows where the level's at.
Yeah.
This was a brutal day. I mean, just, you know, I spoke to Jai, you guys spoke to Jack.
Yeah, we'll hear from Jack actually in a sec.
Yeah, I'll tell you who was chipper coming across the line. I didn't interview him, but I gave him a yell out, and he actually spotted me and said, "G'day, Derbo."
I saw him.
Surprise. He was chipper.
Actually, Derbo, when he crossed the line, he looked at me and he just went, "Right, mate." I'm not too bad. But
we're not too bad, but you've just done 4,400 vertical in 144 kilometres. How are you, brother?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he was doing a pretty good tempo past the line. Like, he wasn't. Jai was pretty destroyed, if I can use that phrase. He's a bit disappointed. I think he wishes his form was a bit better. I think we sort of alluded, or I alluded in a question, you know, you were there, you know, you're in the mix, you're having a go. So you got to be happy a little bit with yourself. And he said, yeah, but you know, you're 2% off and it can absolutely hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. You know, 1 or 2% off your best form, you get crucified. By the likes of Pogacar, Vingegaard, Remco. So, yeah, he's just lacking a little bit, you know. And for Bora, you know, they've got some lessons, not so much to learn, I don't think. I don't think that's a fair comment.
But they've had
bad luck.
Let's
have
a chat here that something you and I chatted in the car.
Yeah.
Bora is at a crossroad because it's not Red Bull Bora. Roglic is not eternal.
Are they at a crossroad, do you think?
I think they are at a crossroad because Red Bull came in.
Yeah.
So the money invested, they will need more results.
So they want
results. Red Bull is not here to lose.
No, of course.
Look at where they are in sport.
Yeah.
Formula One, any other sport, they are a winning team.
Yeah.
They are a winning formula.
Yeah.
That performance here
yeah.
cannot satisfy Red Bull. This is not what they're here for.
No.
So therefore, Jai has a massive role to play in the future of Bora Red Bull. And I believe he should stay at that team because he can play a total.
No, I agree. I mean, Roglic is, you know, he's over 30 now, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's why I mean, like, he's not eternal.
Towards the end of his career.
Exactly. How many seasons has he got in him left?
Yeah, and how many seasons at the top? You'd give it two.
How many Vuelta does he want to win?
You know? Yeah. I mean, he's won enough. He's won three. He's won the Giro.
Yeah.
He's been an incredible athlete. Athlete, Roglic. I would think maybe two more big seasons. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe only one. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. Whereas Jai, I think his trajectory is still
100%
on the up. So, and I think he'll still. You know, I asked Aldag as well. I spoke to Ralph Aldag, interviewed him, and I said, do you learn? Do you learn as a person? You know, you've been an athlete, but you've been on the winning side, and now you're on the, you know, I didn't say this, but the losing side. And he said, yeah, you do. Sometimes you learn the most when you get your back, you know, belted against the wall. He said, this is when you learn more. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see their debrief and how they move forward. And then, probably, as you say, who do they sign?
Exactly.
Who's the young riders that, and who's going to step up in the next, you know, maybe at the Vuelta. We'll see the new young star produce something. So that whole, and not just Bora, a few other teams you know, are on the lookout.
Right, let's listen to Jack Haig at the end of this stage.
Right, Jack, on the paper it was always going to be a tough stage, but you're still smiling. How is it? How was it?
I was pretty hard on smiling because there's one less stage to do now. I think tomorrow's also going to be pretty odd. I tried to get in the breakaway there at the beginning to get a bit of a head start on the climbs, but we didn't really have any rest all day. So I'm not really sure what happened in the final there, but I hope Santiago stayed inside the top 10. And then now we just go on to tomorrow.
Yeah, and then, of course, Pogacar attacking again and again and again. How is it seen inside the peloton, this attacking attitude?
Well, I'm not sure very many people see it, to be honest, because there's not very many people next to him when he does it. I think it's good for the sport, to be honest. Like, it makes the sport very entertaining, and I think it's great that we have sort of this big battle between Poggi and Jonas, and I hope that it kind of elevates the sport a little bit and makes it a little bit more entertaining and brings more fans and spectators out. In the end, that's what we do it for. We do it for entertainment, so as long as you guys find it entertaining, then I'm more than happy that he does it.
We'll validate, yeah?
Thanks.
Jack Haig, I had a chance to talk to him, as you've heard. Yeah, he's pretty perplexed about the idea that, you know, how do you beat Pogacar and how do they react when they just don't see him attacking because he attacks at a pointy end and then that's it, he's gone. He must be hard, to be honest, to be in that peloton when you know Pogacar can attack anytime, any moment, anywhere, anyhow.
I think we've talked about this before, and you know, you love your tennis and you follow your tennis, and so does Keno. And you've talked about being in the era of, in tennis, Nadal, Djokovic and Federer. You know, and there's a couple of players. Mm-hmm. And who's the other Swiss guy?
Wawrinka.
Total legend.
Total
amazing
respect.
Player. Won two slams.
Three slams.
Oh, he's actually won three slams.
Wawrinka won three slams.
Yep.
He won in Australia.
Yes, he
won
he did.
In France. And he won the US Open.
Yeah.
The one that eluded from him is Wimbledon. And also, Wawrinka, just diverting the rule, is a guy that when he decided he's going to try to win the Australian Open, he built a total replica of the Rod Laver court with the spaces in his house to train and be the best he can.
Jeepers.
So is Tadej Pogacar building the Alpe d'Huez?
Well, no, it's someone else who wants to win just one Grand Tour.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's building the whole course somewhere?
Who's building an Alpe d'Huez? This is what you've got to do, guys.
Yeah, this is huge. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So, you know, so in the next, well, Jai is one of these guys right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's won the Giro. He's actually nailed a Grand Tour, you know, in the era of
exactly,
and not just Pog, and I think we can put Roglic in that elite group. He's won three Vueltas and a Giro. He hasn't won the Tour, but he's finished second.
Mm-hmm.
Pog now looks set to win his third Tour. He's won a Giro. He's only done one Giro, but he's won it. So Jai is one of those riders, and will he be a Wawrinka? You know, in 10 years' time, will we look back and say, what a legend. What an amazing legend, you know. And we will say.
Mm-hmm.
But But I hope he has one or two Grand Tours added to that CV.
Tomorrow, Jai wins the Vuelta. Okay, he's got a Grand Tour in Italy and a Grand Tour in Spain. Is he a bigger cyclist for Australia than Cadel Evans?
Oh, mate. Oh, no. How dare you?
How dare you touching Cadel?
How dare you? Even Jai would be... He'd be embarrassed.
I just want you to say how important the
propaganda.
Tour de France is.
Listeners, I can feel you trying to jump through the microphone, especially Australian listeners. No. I think, look, Cadel podiumed at the Giro, I think. Podiumed at the Vuelta. Second twice at the Tour. Won a world championship.
Yeah.
Won Flesh Wallonne. No, he stands head and shoulders.
It was just a stupid
question. No, you were serious, brother. You were, how dare you? No, you were. I grabbed the bait, didn't I? I fully grabbed hold of the bait.
Okay, Michael, let's take a short break. And then when we come back, guess what? I had a chat with someone that was a little bit of a fighter in his days for French cycling. Thomas Vauclair, straight after this.
Ready to take your cycling adventures to the next level? Since 1975, Jayco has been proudly manufacturing in Australia and is the largest name in caravans, pop-tops, camper trailers, hybrids, motorhomes and campervans. With the largest service network in Australia and unbeatable access to parts and accessories, Jayco is here for you. Cycle by day and relax by night with your fully equipped Jayco to keep you out of the elements. Jayco is built here for out there. Visit jayco.com.au to discover the range.
Get the ultimate Tour de France experience with SBS On Demand. Download the app on your preferred device or connected TV to access the Tour de France hub. Enjoy full live coverage, stage replays, extended highlights, mini stage recaps, and bite-sized stage-winning moments. It's all available, anytime, anywhere, and streaming for free at your home of cycling. SBS On Demand.
Welcome back to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. As I mentioned, Monsieur Mackenzie, I had a chat with Thomas Vauclair. Remember Thomas?
The man with the... Mate, who can forget that wagging tongue? Well, you know, the wagging tongue, it came out whenever the cameras were on him. It just dangled out, you know, no matter what. I mean, like a puppy dog, big puppy dog.
So I remember interviewing Thomas Vauclair in English when he retired on his last Tour de France, where we were sitting in a roundabout with a lot of cars going around and it was a weird setup. Anyway... I was lucky enough to catch up with him again just for a few minutes tonight at the end of the stage. Let's listen to him. All right, Thomas Vauclair, legend of the French cycling. Happy and great to see you back on the road of Tour de France. You're on a French TV motorbike.
Yes, since I stopped my career in 2017, I'm on the motorbike of the French TV. So now it's the seventh time I'm on the tour with the French TV.
This Tour de France, incredible. Pogacar, incredible. As an ex-rider, is there something in you that would have wanted to be able to battle in that era?
Cycling is completely different. Since comparatively to when I was a professional rider, as the level is higher, all the guys are stronger, all the guys of the peloton, and even more the best, Pogacar, Vingegaard, and also. And I don't think I would be happy in such a cycling because I was in old school guys, and but it's different. It's like this today, and we have very very nice races on this Tour de France, but not only on the classic races and the cobble races for cobble classic, for example, and the World Championship. So it's completely different, and there are more and more money in cycling. The teams are stronger and stronger. Look at UAE Team Emirates, for example. So it's different. It's not better. It's not bad, but it's different. It's cycling today, and it's nice to see.
I've got one last question. Can Australia beat France at the Olympics?
For sure. But I hope it won't be the case. But I think... other guys are stronger than Australian and French.
Merci Thomas.
Thank you.
So it was Thomas Vaucler, not giving away anything on the Olympic selection, or at least the performance they're expecting from France. But you would expect someone like Alaphilippe to be up there, and maybe, you know, maybe the Australians can actually beat them. Be interesting to see.
I hope so, from a obviously parochial point of view. But no, it'll be that will be good. It's just around the corner too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's have a look at stage 20 of the Tour de France coming up on our screens, of course, tonight on SBS. It's a superb stage, if I can say. Is this the Queen stage?
I mean, well, was today the Queen stage? I'm not sure. I mean, there's been about three Queen stages this year. Okay, let's take a look. 132 kilometres. It's a shorter day than the day that we've just had. Guess what? There's actually more elevation gain.
Yeah.
4,600. So 4,400 wasn't enough for the day before. Let's add another 200 metres on top of that. The summits are not as high, but they're still high enough. And there's four categorised climbs. It's shark's teeth. Category two to kick things off. Then three category ones. Summit finish at the end to Col de la Quello. That is terrible.
That is actually terrible, Mike.
I'm tired.
Col de la Couliole.
Col de la Couliole.
Couliole.
Yeah.
It's hard to say even in French. I'll get you this one. So.
There you go. Yep. So they go up to about 1,600 metres, 1,678 at the finish. So it's not high peaks. There's high mountains in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the 4,600 altitude. It's day 20 of 21. It's the day after a mammoth day in the mountains. And actually, it comes at the end of really a tough 3 days that they've just had. Not all mountainous, but really, really solid days. So this, what I will say about this first and foremost, let's just put the GC battle, etc., to the side, the stage. Mm-hmm. Sprinters, they've got to battle to make the time cut. They have to battle to make the time cut.
There is an intermediate sprint as well.
Yes.
Which
forget
is
that
almost,
won't even...
No, they won't even feature.
The green jersey battle for me is done.
Is it finished? Yeah.
Yep. Hate to, you know, spoil the party, but...
But it's done as long as everybody finishes.
That's right. Gourmet's got to cross the line with the time
as well.
Cut. I think he will. Philipson should, mm-hmm. but yeah, these guys like Cavendish, etc., they've got a battle on their hands to make it. They're going to have to work pretty hard.
It's cruel from the organizers to create this.
It's the toughest. I think we said it in a cross today, in a mm-hmm. live cross. I think it's possibly the toughest final 3 or 4 days in tour history we've
seen
for a long time. And the TT, the TT, no matter what, obviously is harder than the Champs-Élysées
mm-hmm.
because you've got to race full noise. It's a climb in the time trial.
On your own?
Yeah, on your own. So there's no, you can't, and you don't want to be a rider that backs it off a little bit, misses the cut, you still cross the line, but officially you're not in the
rankings as
finishing the tour.
Yeah, you want to
finish. So all riders, I think, will go full gas just to
be
make sure. But you've got to make it there. You've got to make it to the start line of the TT. So this, to me, is the hardest. Well, of the 20 tours I've worked on, almost 20, this is the hardest last.
And you know
days.
What? It's Saturday night. It's Saturday night in Australia. So you should be in front of your television because this is prime time viewing.
Yeah,
and
bring it home, people.
Yeah, exactly. And then look at where we are. I mean, we just bring it back to where we started this podcast, but we are in the heart of the mountains. And like you said, the Tour de France does not always finish up in the heart of the mountains. Mm. So it's not finished yet. And there's still a lot to go for. Who wins that stage?
Okay, so
you knew I was coming with this
one. Yeah, it's like today, isn't it? You know, we said breakaway, maybe if the GC or if UAE want to fight for the win. My gut feeling, which sounds a bit boring, I think Pogacar
again.
Yeah,
He wants six stages.
Yeah, I think he wants it, and I think this is more out of respect for his teammates, mm-hmm. and they'll be like, yeah, you know, stuff it, let's get another one.
Yeah.
We're prepared to work for you, so. You know,
that's
don't
fantastic,
let us down.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they'll try and do.
And it's all to play for, of course, on SBS tonight. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Jayco and SBS Cycling Podcast. Brought to you by Jayco, your great escape.